Hello, friends. Welcome back to another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
Hello, it me, Alice Slater.
It you. How are you today, my friend?
Oh, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I am fine. I'm happy to chat to you. I'm happy to be here for another episode.
Always a delight.
What are you reading at the moment, my friend?
So I've got two little books on the go at the moment, depending on what mood takes me. So I'm reading One Sky Day by Leonie Ross.
Yes.
Which we talked about in the pod before and completely misunderstood the premise.
Oh, so, yes, in our books that we were looking forward to. You gave an account of it that later turned out to be false.
Entirely fictionalized. It's about a fictional Caribbean island and the inhabitants thereon. There's lots of various, like, magical, beautiful literary things going on, but the essential premise is two lovers crossing the island to find one another, and the whole book is set over one day. And it's gorge, but it's very literary. So when I'm in, like, the headspace to, I don't know about you, but like with really long literary novels, I do quite like to read big chunks at a time.
Yes.
I don't like to dip in and out.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
So if I don't have time to read a significant portion, I have also got a juicy thriller on the go, which is Erin Kelly's new book, which is coming out next week. Watch Her Fall by Erin Kelly. A juicy thriller to read in between my juicy literary fiction.
Two juices.
Yeah, two juices. What about you?
I am reading Happy All the Time by Laurie Colwyn, which you may have seen on various, you know, London Literary Ladies social media, because it was reissued last week. And yeah, I am reading that and I am absolutely loving it. It is a sort of literary romantic comedy set in New York and it is delightful. Truly having a great time. Very nice dialogue.
Good shit.
Yes. But today we are stepping back further than the 70s or whenever Happy All the Time was written. We are going back and we're going to discuss classiques. Hit us, Alice.
Okay, so my inspo for this episode was, I love a bit of BookTube, and I watched a very delightful video by a very delightful Canadian BookTuber. But basically, she did like a top 10, like a list of classics that you should start with if you haven't read classics before. And it just kind of got me thinking about what I would have put on my classic list and whether or not my friend Bert reads classics. So yeah, I just thought this would be a good little topic for us to dip our little toes into. First of all, though, like, one of the things with this video that I watched was that she included modern classics.
Yes.
And I personally, when I think of classics, think pre-1900.
I would agree.
So basically, I did, but then I know, like, at Waterstones, we would shelve, I think it was pre-1930. Was the general rule, I think. But I don't know, I feel like everything changed after the First World War, right? Like, everything changed. Modernism changed everything. Like, so I think 1900 is a nice cutoff point. And it's, I did, like, a bit of research.
A little buffer zone of 1900 to 1914 to, you know, account for the pre-First World War time.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking. So I thought I'd do a little Google, and I found that, obviously, unsurprisingly, there is no consensus on this at all, which is probably why some people include modern classics when they're talking about classics, and why some people don't. But yeah, I found that a literary critic called Harold Bloom defined, like, four ages of literature. And I'm not going to go into it, but I just really enjoyed the fact that, so you have the theocratic age, which is like back in the day, all the ancient Greek, ancient Romans, ancient Indian texts, including things like the Bible. And then you have the aristocratic age, which is like just back in the day. That's like the Divine Comedy, Don Quixote. Then we have the democratic age, which is like what generally is the time period that most of the classics that we're going to talk about land in. So that includes like all of the A-listers from the 19th century. And then anything from 1900 onwards is just called the chaotic age.
We are living in a chaotic age.
I don't know why, but I just love that. It's chaotic times, my friend. And it has been for like 121 years.
It's not even a 21st century chaos. It's just 1900s onwards.
Yeah, it just all went kaput. So yeah, anything past 1900 is a modern classic, defined very loosely on these terms. And obviously, like definitions don't really matter. But then there is also a whole school of thought about, like, what within these different time periods, what is still classed as a classic, because not every book is cut from the same cloth, you know. But we, for the purpose of this chat, do not care to discuss whether or not something deserves to be a part of the quote-unquote canon. That's not for us to say. Or maybe it is. Maybe we'll trash the canon. All right, so anyway, that's enough, like, preamble.
I feel like that was an interesting preamble, my friend.
Oh, thank you.
We learned about the chaotic age. Thank you, Harold Bloom.
So first of all, like, are you a classic reader? Do you read classics?
I do, but not in great number. I would say that really forms a very small percentage of what I would consume. How about you?
I probably read one or two per year. I think I'm very limited to the Western canon for a start, but which I think, you know, most of the classics I've read have also probably been through study. During my MA, I did a unit on European Gothic literature. So I've read fuckloads of that and not much of anything else. Apart from when, you know, the wind is in my favour and I fancy a specific title, which I guess we'll get into later. The oldest thing I think I've read is probably Chaucer. But I haven't even read all of that. The old Canterbury Tales.
Yeah. I did a bit of that for my A-levels.
Yeah.
And I also did the Divine Comedy in the original, whatever, you know, old Italian. So I've read that as well. But yeah, I would not go...
In old Italian?
Yes.
Sorry, I have to, like, process that. But then I remember that obviously you're very good with languages.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a fun little time. It did seem quite a wild thing to make, like, 17, 18-year-old children do. It seemed almost, like, inappropriately academic for our age. But it was good. It's really fun and weird. It would be one of those things that, like, you'd be reading it and your teacher would be saying, like, this is what's happening. And I'd be like, bitch, are you sure that's what's happening? Because that sounds insane. But yeah, she was right. She wasn't lying. But then so that's actually quite fun.
With your experience of reading... So I found with reading Chaucer on the page, no fucking clue what's going on. And then my A-level teacher was this incredible woman who could do, as you know, as far as my like teenage years anyway, she could read in a middle English like vernacular just perfectly. And hearing it out loud... You could follow it beautifully.
Yeah, it made so much more sense when it was like read aloud. I agree.
Which also makes sense because I guess the whole point of the Canterbury Tales is that they're being told.
Yeah, it is a verbal thing. But also I think because we associate like classics and old stuff with being quite like repressed, I think that also makes it harder to understand things like the Divine Comedy or Canterbury Tales when they can be quite like rude and weird.
Oh god,
do you know
what
I mean? Like you almost like you assume that it's not doing what it is explicitly doing because you're like, but this is from the past and sexuality and naughtiness is an exclusively contemporary phenomenon.
And it's something that only we teenagers truly understand.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what does this old bitch know about anything?
Yeah, it's so true.
Oh yeah, so my kind of general vibe with classics is also that, like, sometimes I feel like I don't need to read them because they're such a kind of cultural touchstone that they get referenced so much that I feel like I already know what is in them. Even if I actually don't. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, 100%.
I feel like I know so much. Like, I don't think I have ever read The Picture of Dorian Gray because I'm just like, oh, you know, painting, attic, blah, blah, blah. I know exactly what, you know, I almost feel like, what is there for me to get out of it? Where is the element of surprise? Do you know what I mean? I don't know. Is that dumb?
I mean, no. I feel like there's no dumb statements in this chat. Although there will be many dumb statements in this chat. I kind of feel like everyone is qualified to have an opinion on books they haven't read. Like, why not? Like, we have opinions on all sorts of shit that we haven't necessarily experienced. And I don't think classics are any different. In fact, as you said, like, I think the classics exist in the kind of... What's the word I'm looking for? They exist in culture to such a degree that there are going to be some that you already... that will feel very familiar in the reading of them. But like, obviously we don't just read for plot. It's also about language and delivery. And I think they're often full of surprises. But that doesn't mean I'm going to read the ones that I don't like the look of just because they might surprise me, because
life's too short.
You've got other things to read.
So yeah, like I feel like there's probably loads that I would actually enjoy reading that I have not read. And maybe that is partly because I'm like, I feel like I kind of know too much about them. But if I do consume a classic, it is more likely to be on audio, just because it feels lower maintenance. Would you ever do a classic on audio, or are you strictly eyeballing?
So there's no strictly about it, but I don't think I have ever done a classic via audio.
Yes.
I've definitely, like, I think I have a couple. I just started The Awakening by Kate Chopin. I started that. There's like a free version on Spotify. And I started that a couple of weeks ago. And then I was like, this doesn't feel right. I just want to read this with my eyeballs. And then, yeah, I've also, on your recommendation, got the Audible like monster bumper thing.
Yes.
Because there was one in particular that you thought was great in that.
Which I may come to later in this discussion.
Okay, cool.
But regarding your little listening to The Awakening by Kate Chopin, I was discussing this book with What Page Are You On reader, my dad, only last week, because he studied that in his minor American novel course at university back in the day. And we were talking about it last week. So
I feel very drawn to it because it's set in New Orleans.
Interesting. And you do love a bit of that, don't you?
I really do. Anything New Orleans, I'm gonna look at, you know, I'm going to dip my toe in.
Consider.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wait, I have read that. Yeah, is it about, like, a woman going away somewhere?
I don't know. I think, honestly have no idea.
Because a week ago I was like, no, I haven't read that. And now I'm like, I think it was one of the books at the Gower Street Feminist Reading Group.
Yes, it definitely was.
Well then, I correct myself. I have read it. It's good.
All right, cool. Well, I'll read it.
Enjoy.
I will get to it.
But yeah, in terms of like reading books with my eyeballs, I kind of can't remember the last time I read what one would call a classic with my eyes. Yeah, I've really just fallen out of the habit of it. And also there is just, you know, a lot going on. So unless I have a specific purpose for which I would need to read something like this, I might not do it. And then I do feel inclined, I will do it with my ear holes.
So I feel like, because obviously classics are funny because they're always there. So like the choice to pick one up, I think it's a different path for me.
Yeah.
Than picking up anything else. I tend to feel like the spirit moves me, you know, like it might be because I'm on holiday in a place. Like I read The Hunchback of Notre Dame and I was in Paris because that felt like the right thing to do. Or it might be because like, I don't know, in autumn, like when it's spooky season, I might feel like more inclined to read a classic ghost story. I almost this year considered reading A Christmas Carol at Christmas, and then just time made a fool of me. But yeah, I do. I feel like this has to be something in the air. Something will just make me feel like maybe now is the time. I definitely don't feel any pressure to read classics because I'll get to them when I get to them. So I don't have any kind of like weird competitive compulsion to like get through as many as possible or anything like that. And I'm certainly never going to force myself to read anything because I'm 35 years old. I'm not going to do that.
Quite right. But yeah, I also feel like I've often like seen films of classics and been like, I liked that. But then, you know, for example, I've tried to read Wuthering Heights and not ever actually got that far with it. But I really liked the Andrea Arnold film. So in a way, I've read it.
But then so that is one of the problems that I find with classics, and one of the reasons why I thought it'd be fun to do this episode, is that you can find a champion for every classic. Like, they're fucking classics. Like, so many people love Wuthering Heights. So it's, but obviously it's also kind of famously one of the really difficult ones to follow and get into.
Interesting, because I didn't know. I guess there is also, you know, I guess on that note, it's like, I would just assume that all classics are quite accessible, which is not necessarily true.
Oh, fuck no, definitely not. Like, I completed Turn of the Screw last autumn, and I had a horrible time with that book. And then as soon as, you know, I didn't really like seek out other opinions. I think I posted it on Instagram I just found Henry James's writing style really wordy. His sentences are super long. It took me like 2 weeks to read it, and I thought I'd read it in a couple of days because it's a novella, it's really short. And then obviously I found that actually loads of people feel that way about Henry James. Like, that is not a controversial opinion at all. He is famously a very wordy writer. And so, yeah, I just find, like, trying to find people whose opinions I can kind of trust to work out which classics would suit me as a reader best is really hard. And I think some people, you know, you do feel like you don't want to feel silly by saying that you found a classic difficult, because that kind of, that it just feels like, I don't know, either ignorant or you worry about it coming across as really juvenile. But they're fucking books, you know, like, some of them are written to be bawdy and fun, and some of them are super literary and more difficult to kind of get through.
Well, I'm glad to hear the way it goes. That Wuthering Heights is not a universal fave.
So are there any, what are some of your faves?
So I, two that I have consumed both on audio in the past few years that I have really enjoyed are North and South by Elizabeth Gaskell, which is read beautifully by Juliet Stevenson, who does a lot of the best Audible readings, in my humble opinion. I just found that really enjoyable, easy to follow, quite moving. I was very interested in the kind of industrial vibes. It made me kind of understand. I felt like I understood something about, like, how England came to be and how cities came to be. And it kind of unlocked something about industrial history for me in a really enjoyable way. And I also loved Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde by Robert Louis Stevenson, which is in that little monsters trio with Frankenstein and Dracula on Audible. It is read by Richard Armitage, and he just does a great little Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I was, like, scared while I was listening to it. I listened to it a few years ago while I was doing my night shelter work at the night shelter in Walthamstow, and I would have to, like, not listen to it while I was walking there because I was too scared, because it was so dark so early in the morning, and I was, like, freaked out listening to my little monstrous book.
I love that, because was the shelter near, was it, did you have to walk through Walthamstow village?
Yes, and it was in the little graveyard,
which is spooky. Yeah, like, it's this part of Walthamstow that has a graveyard and this building that's called the Ancient House, because it's, like, one of the oldest buildings. They say one of the oldest buildings in London. Who's to say? I'm sure there's lots of buildings that claim that. But yeah, like, it's just a spooky little part of London. And you could really imagine, like, a little fog rolling in. And, you know, you hear the, like, clacking of fucking brogues on brogues on the pavement. And the swish of a cloak. And then fucking Mr. Hyde's there. I can't remember what he does, but he does all sorts of violence, doesn't he?
He's very violent. It was a lot more violent than I was expecting. But another one that I really like, I know you do not like the look of Charles Dickens, and we can address this later on, but I really, really like Great Expectations. I really enjoy that. But I'm not otherwise kind of drawn to Dickens as an author.
My beef with Great Expectations, I believe, is on record already. But, like,
oh,
I
you don't like a coincidence, do you?
Well, it's just, I don't mind the coincidence. It's just that it's such an unlikely coincidence that basically ends the entire book.
Yeah.
And right. I think I went in with such high expectations because it's one that so many people.
Excuse you, have you went in with what?
I'm not doing that again. Okay, well, I went in with great expectations, all right? Great expectations. Because lots of people love it. And I think, like, it, for a lot of people, it was probably a classic that they read that made them realize that classics are easy to follow and easy to read and can have really satisfying, you know, satisfying plots. But it was not that for me. So I felt cheated.
I also think because at the time when I read Great Expectations, the only other Dickens I had read was A Tale of Two Cities, which I really didn't like. So I was almost just grateful to be reading something by him that felt like, oh, okay, cool. Like, this has a plot that I'm enjoying. This is a vibe that I like. How about you? What do you like? Tell me more.
And so, as I said, I like the gothic stuff. Some of my faves, Carmilla by Joseph Sheridan Le Fanu, which is, like,
that's been on my to-do list for some time.
It's so good, mate. It's delightful. Uncle Silas as well, which is, like, a bit more of a kind of classic gothic, you know, like, big spooky house, ingenue, a creepy uncle, all sorts of mysteries. We've already ticked off like The Picture of Dorian Gray, but I love that. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, I really enjoyed. Last autumn, I also read The Legend of Sleepy Hollow for the first time, which was, I was inspired because the spring before everything happened, I went to New York and me and my pal Emily did a little day trip to Tarrytown, aka Sleepy Hollow.
Was it spooky?
And we saw, it was so spooky. We had the best time. It's this really tiny town and like, there's basically nothing of note there apart from a very beautiful kind of ironwork sculpture of the Headless Horseman and some good plaques, a nice little church and a beautiful cemetery. But we had the time of our lives. So yeah, I got back and read that and it's only a short story, but I loved it. I really enjoyed it.
This reminds me of my trip to Salem, of which all I can remember is a lot of pumpkins and having a Dunkin' Donut.
I want to go to Salem so badly.
It was really fun, but yeah, it was like 10 years ago, so I don't remember it. But the memory of the Dunkin' Donut remains. Also, it was Halloween. It was like the perfect timing. That's why there was loads of pumpkins. Oh my God.
Is that when you lived in Montreal?
Yes. So I hopped on the old Greyhound down to Boston and then had a little trip to Salem, because who wouldn't at Halloween?
Well, exactly. God, I want to do that so badly.
One day.
So yeah, and then what else? And then yeah, I mentioned The Hunchback of Notre Dame, which I appreciate, like, obviously has some pretty heavy ableism going on in that. I really enjoyed it when I was 22. And again, like, I think it's just most of the other ones that I've listed are actually super short. So The Hunchback of Notre Dame is a bit chunkier. And I felt very, like, satisfied and proud of myself for reading, you know, a longer classic off my own back. Okay, so I mentioned Turn of the Screw. Are there any others that you don't like or would just know that you wouldn't read? Like, just stuff that you think probably not ever going to be for me?
No, not necessarily. I think there's room in my life for all sorts, but a lot of people have recommended the audiobook read by Tandy Newton of Jane Eyre, which is a book I have not read. And I did start listening to that, and even that I couldn't get into, but I would like to. So I'm hoping that in the fullness of time, I can.
I read Jane Eyre when I was about 16, and I was inspired by two really odd things. I think that was probably the first classic adult novel that I read just for the sake of it, you know, off my own back. And it was two things. Firstly, a point horror book called The Body, which highly references Jane Eyre in a way that doesn't actually totally make sense. I had a very different impression of what the plot would be based on The Body, but basically it's about this girl who gets hired to read to another fellow teenager who's been in a really terrible accident. And this girl who's recovering from this awful accident, she's paralyzed. And so as they're reading Jane Eyre together, every now and again, the reader catches her, like, flick her little finger on certain lines. So she ends up writing down everything that this girl, like, twitches her finger to and learns, like, the truth of the accident, which is such a great idea for a book. And I just, I reread it recently. And obviously it's just, yeah, it's a good time. It's a good nostalgic experience. But yeah, it was that. And then also the Girls in Love series by Jacqueline Wilson.
Which I've read and I have no memory of, that made me want to read Jane Eyre.
In Girls Under Pressure, she reads Jane Eyre to try and, like, forget, try and distract herself from her hunger. And she's like, I would even gobble Jane's burnt porridge or whatever the fuck it is. So I just felt like it was this book that kept cropping up in my teenage reading. So I decided to read it. And I remember loving it.
Well, we loved Wide Sargasso Sea by Jean Rhys, which is the kind of contemporary companion piece to Jane Eyre. And I should have done a little two for one and read that at the time.
But that, I think that's much more difficult to get into, personally.
Well then, I think I may re-download my little Tandy Newton audiobook, because especially now that I'm not just sort of listening to my audiobooks while I'm stomping from A to B after work. I now tend to listen in more concentrated time periods while I'm, like, making my earrings or sanding my earrings. I feel like it could be good to do something like that in longer chunks. So you're a spooky little goth. Have you read Dracula?
I have. I kind of had an early run at it for my undergrad for this European Gothic literature thing. Didn't gel with it at all. Came back to it about 2 years ago, and
Okay, so it obviously it's really iconic, and I loved the first two thirds of it, and then it really goes off piste, and essentially I just feel like I ended up like kind of skimming the end. The whole action scene of killing the Count goes on forever, and I really hate action scenes in books anyway. It just doesn't do it for me. I find them really difficult to follow, and I just find them a bit boring. So yeah, I feel like Dracula for me is a bit of a TLDR, you know, long read.
Yeah, like it's got elements that you like, but it's the actual, I guess it's like, you know, my vibe with a lot of classics I haven't read, where I'm like, I know what's going on here, do I really need to read it? And like, you like the thing that's going on here, and the act of reading it is maybe not as fun as the element that drew you to it.
But I think what's especially frustrating is that the first two thirds are perfect. They're great. Like, I really enjoyed them. And I do wonder if sometimes with books like this, I just wonder if, you know, the spirit will move me in years to come and I will reread it and maybe find something different. Maybe when my expectations, you know, my expectations would be more in line with what the text actually is, then maybe I'll enjoy it more. But certainly for my first / second reading, I just can never quite make it all the way through to the end. Just goes on a little bit too long.
Yeah, I've never finished it. I've read, yeah, I don't know how much I've read, but I've definitely read at least the beginning bit, but I've never got to the end. I hear you.
And then what about Jane Austen? Because I've never read a word.
I like Pride and Prejudice, but I, again, would happily watch the TV or the film version.
I've just always felt like Jane Austen looks a bit wet to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. Yeah, there's enough there to enjoy plot-wise, but I don't feel like she has enhanced my life.
One thing I am grateful for, though, is Emma, which paved the way for Clueless.
Yes, so exactly.
That's a good thing.
That's what I mean. I do feel like there is, you know, kind of plot level, quite fertile ground there in terms of like tropes and narratives that I think are quite interesting and can be made interesting. But like to read, I'm just, yeah, I could do it, but I don't necessarily want to.
Can I just say I love that energy. I could do it, but
I don't want to.
I don't want to. And then, yeah, we've already talked about Dickens. I just don't feel moved. I don't feel moved to read any more Dickens. But I, again, with Dickens, I'm very grateful for the Pickwick Papers.
I was just purely thinking about this.
Because we have a friend called Jenny who gets, I would say, quite strangely angry when she thinks about the Pickwick Papers.
She thinks it's the most disgusting name. It's shocking and it's horrifying. And I agree.
It just tickles me.
She's very angry about Pickwick Papers.
It just really tickles me.
I have no idea what Pickwick Papers is about, so I don't plan to find out.
Me neither, but incidentally, the Canadian booktuber that I was talking about earlier is currently reading it. And because it was written, it's an episodic novel, right? So she's reading it per, like, section.
Yes.
As it would have been published. So she's reading it very slowly. And I feel like that, for me, sounds like torture.
No, that's horrible.
I mean, good for her. It's an interesting way to read it, but yeah. I think I'd rather just plow through than be stuck with it for however many weeks or months. Not to be like super negative, but you know, that's just my vibe. Have you read any of The Russians?
I haven't, but I do go to the theatre quite a lot, so I see, you know, Chekhov plays, but I've never read non-plays by him. And then in terms of like other Russians, I don't think I've read any. So I did, my undergraduate degree was in French, so any kind of classic, you know, I've read Swan's Way in French, but that's the kind of my language vibe, my foreign language reading vibe. So no, I have not read any Russian stuff. I tend to err towards the English and the French. How about you?
I've read a fair amount of Chekhov's short stories because I was a creative writing student. I'm quite looking forward to reading George Saunders' new book.
Yes.
A Swim in the Pond in the Rain, I think it's called. Which is about creative writing and kind of picks apart Chekhov stories. Is it just Chekhov? It may not just be Chekhov, but it picks apart kind of classic short stories. So I'm interested in reading that, and I will reread those short stories as I go. If they're not published in there. If they are, then obviously I will. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, because even though I've read quite a lot of them, I cannot remember a fucking thing. Do you know, it's like some stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, but some stuff that you read just, especially when you study, because you spend so much time with it and you study it really closely, it's amazing that your brain can still just go, cool, well, something's got to go, may as well be that, and you just completely wipe it from your memory entirely.
Like the memory erasing pen in Men in Black.
Exactly. So yeah, I'll look forward to rereading those, I suppose. And I think that's basically everything I have to say on classics.
We've been there, we've done that. Even if we definitely haven't in many cases.
The funny thing though is that we have no idea how long we've been recording for, because my laptop overheated, so we just vibed for a bit.
We just took an extended little chat amongst yeah, ourselves. So
this episode hopefully is a normal length and not weirdly short. Oh, God, love you.
But I'm very interested in the, you know, reading habits of our listeners. So is there a classic that we've discussed and unfairly dismissed? Is there one that you particularly think we, as Bethany and Alice, of What Page Are You On, would enjoy? Do you read them often, or do you read them under duress? Do you only read them when you're like Alice, it is spooky season, or you're in a certain place? Tell us about your experience with classicos. We would like to hear from you.
And Bethany, do you think, after having this conversation, is there a classic that you will now bump up your list and consider reading next?
I would really like to read Carmilla.
Yeah.
That is what I would enjoy for myself.
I actually have two copies, so I will give you a copy.
When we meet again, outside somewhere. Yeah, I would like to read that. And I think I will also re-download Jane Eyre as read by Tandy Newton. Because, as we know, I love to return my Audible books. So I returned it when I did not vibe with it. But I'm going to get it back.
Gorge.
How about you? You tempted by anything? Not really.
Well, I think certainly I have realized, I've been thinking about like gaps in my spooky reading, and I haven't read Frankenstein. So maybe Frankenstein is one that I will promote to a sooner rather than later read. Yeah, that's probably it though.
Well, if as you've I got said, that, like, if you've got the little monsters thing on Audible, you've got Frankenstein.
Yeah, I think I have to read it though.
With your eyeballs.
The thing, so I know this has been covered before on the pod, but I'll say it again. I do find sometimes that listening to fiction for the first time via audio is something that I struggle with a little bit. I tend to use Audible these days. I mostly reread stuff via audio. That's not to say that I don't ever listen to fiction that I haven't already read. But yeah, I just sometimes struggle a little bit to follow it. So I think Frankenstein for me will be a physical read, but I don't know, we'll see. I do have it already, so maybe it'd be more prudent to listen.
Well, I wish you luck with your Frankensteining.
Cheers, mate.
I have had a great time thinking about this, and I hope our listeners at home also have. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at WhatPagePod, and we will see you next time.
See you next time. Bye.